Hello and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name's Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome back Larry Gross to our podcast. Larry is a 44-year veteran of the freight transportation sector, specializing in intermodal and rail transport, also with experience in the truck, trailer, rail car, and intermodal equipment segments. In 2003, Larry established Gross Transportation Consulting, an independent consulting practice specializing in freight transportation matters based out of his hometown in Durango, Colorado. Larry has also worked with all surface transport modes with involvement in intermodal, rail, truck, and inland water freight transport. Larry also writes and produces the intermodal industry's leading analytical and forecasting report entitled Intermodal in Depth, and he works closely with IANA, also more commonly known as the Intermodal Association of North America, and has assisted the organization with educational programs for its annual Intermodal Expo for a number of years. That's also included participation in the Inside Intermodal General Session that kicks off the meeting, where he has offered the attendees an analysis of the current intermodal situation, as well as expected future trends. In 2024, Larry was honored to receive the IANA's Silver Kingpin Award, which recognizes an individual or individuals who've had a significant impact on the growth and advancement of the intermodal freight transportation industry. And prior to starting his consulting practice, Larry enjoyed a long career in intermodal equipment, development, and sales. And he is an individual most closely associated with the innovative Road Railer Intermodal System, an organization that he headed for more than a decade. Larry, welcome back to the podcast.
Jeff, great to be with you, and thanks for having me, as always.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real pleasure to have you back. So, Larry, we'll start with a top-level approach here, and that simply is, how would you assess the current state of the intermodal market on a year-to-date basis through roughly now that we're, I guess, officially in mid-October?
Well, we just received yesterday the data for September. So hot off the press, I can give you some numbers.
Yes.
And, you know, I would say that the overall outlook so far this year for intermodal has been quite strong. And if we look at the year-to-date numbers for North America, they're up 8.8% year-to-date total intermodal activity. And that is being driven to a very large extent by the increase in the international side of intermodal. And when we talk about intermodal, we really have to keep in mind, as I have said previously when we chatted, that intermodal is really two different markets together.
Okay.
One is the international market, which is the movement of ISO containers inland from the ports, also known as IPI or inland point intermodal. And the other piece is what I'll call for shorthand domestic, which is the movement of domestic containers and what's left of TOFC of trailers.
Okay.
And it's roughly 50-50. But these two market segments are behaving super differently so far this year. And just to put some numbers to it, international, that ISO container moves, are up 15.5% year to date. So extremely strong growth there. At the same time, domestic intermodal is up only 2.8. So there's a huge disparity between what is the coming in being driven by international trade, being driven by imports, and what we've seen on the domestic side, which is much more in tune with the relatively sluggish environment that our truckload over-the-road carriers are seeing. So that we've seen good growth in intermodal, but it's been mainly powered by international. And if I look at just the September data, it's still the same story. International up 13% and domestic up 2% year over year.
Right. Absolutely. That's a really great point. It's interesting, Larry, kind of all the talk, especially earlier this month, was centering around the labor dispute between the International Longshoremen's Association and the United States Maritime Alliance. Without getting into all the inside baseball the back and forth, if you will, they came to an agreement to, or a tentative agreement to, through January 15th. It looks like they agreed on the wage part, but the automation piece remains a big part of it. With that as sort of a backdrop, I guess leading up to the brief 3-day work stoppage, and since then, what impact did it have on intermodal from an operational perspective, from a productivity perspective, and what could be in the cards, say, between now and January 15th, and perhaps after January 15th, depending on whether or not a new 6-year deal gets reached?
So I would say, Jeff, there have been some major impacts from that whole situation, but it's part of the picture. You know, if we look at the strength that we're seeing on the international side for intermodal, there's really two pillars underpinning that. One is that I think freight has been moving earlier than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to start with, I think it's true to say that, you know, imports have been very strong altogether. But what's unknown is just how much of that strength that we've seen year to date has been borrowed from the future, borrowed from the fourth quarter and upstreamed in an attempt to avoid the potential disruptions that might come as a result of the strike. So, you know, there was a lot of volume, I think, that came in earlier than normal. If I look at IPI, it looks like it peaked in week 37. Normally, it would peak in week 39, and last year it peaked in week 42. So last year was late. This year, I suspect, is early, and we're going to see a more rapid than normal fall off in imports as we get through the fourth quarter. The other piece of the puzzle here is what I would say I'll call east to west divergent,
mm-hmm.
Which is cargo that had been coming into the East Coast has been diverted to other routings, trans-Pacific routings, and it's coming into the West Coast. And West Coast share has certainly increased significantly, particularly over the last 3 months, and LA Long Beach and PNW in especially so. They're getting a much larger share of import TEUs than they were last year at this time, and a much larger share than on average. That is an intermodal tailwind because the length of haul off the West Coast is so much longer than off the East Coast, and intermodal share moving inland is much, much higher for West Coast arriving cargo than it is for East Coast. So there's been a couple of strings to that situation. So what I see, at least for the fourth quarter, until this ILA situation gets sorted, is a continuation, because I think there's quite a high likelihood, given the difficulty of resolving the automation issue, with the union taking a very hard line stance and management not yes. wanting to roll back its hard-won gains from the past. There's a very good likelihood, I think, that we'll see further disruption when January rolls around.
Okay.
So I expect that diversion is going to continue. And the other thing that's causing diversion is the continued situation in the Red Sea, with the rebels of Yemen firing missiles at the container ships and forcing them to go the long way around Africa, which is adding cost and time to East Coast cargo, and also helping make the diversion to the West Coast look economically favorable. And that, who knows when that's going to change.
Yeah, no, that's a tough situation with no easy answers, to say the least. So Larry, one thing that we usually talk about every year is just the topic of peak season. And I know that it's had different meanings, especially going back in recent years to the pandemic. There was a peak season all the time vibe for a while, then there was barely a peep or a peak. How did you assess, or how do you view sort of the 2024 peak season in terms of activity? You had just mentioned front loading. There was a lot of earlier shipping. We saw some very, very high import numbers, especially out of LA and Long Beach. And I believe that Long Beach had another strong month. I think they just issued their numbers yesterday or the day before. In LA, I believe LA is coming out tomorrow. But that said, where do things stand peak season wise in 2024? And what perhaps is different about it than last year or the year before?
Well, I think we've got a different story again for international than for domestic. I expect that domestic will have a normal peak season in terms of the timing of it. And typically domestic intermodal peaks in the month of October. And I still expect that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's going to be a barn burner. I think that domestic is pretty, demand is pretty tepid, but I expect that I'll say a normal seasonal pattern given that. On the international side, as I think I mentioned already, I think we're past peak. Peak will prove at the end of the day, we'll say peak occurred, sometime in August.
Okay.
And that volume, much of that volume is already moved. It's in warehouses waiting to be deployed. That's not to say it's going to drop off a cliff, but it's definitely going to be, I think, a more rapid decline in fourth quarter than we would typically expect to see.
Okay. All right. Great. Another big topic, especially a year ago, was that regarding the inventory situation. There was a destocking environment. Things appeared to have at least normalized or leveled out in a sense a year later. How do you sort of view the current state of inventories, given that intermodal does have a good amount of consumer side push and pull to it, if you will?
Well, I'm not particularly authority on that, but it seems to me that inventories are probably, for the most part, about where the retailers want them to be. Perhaps at this moment, a little bit elevated because of that front loading that we've been discussing.
Yeah.
But I have never been one to talk about restocking as if there was some sort of large deficit in inventory and expecting a big upswing to fill a void that, in my view, doesn't exist.
Okay.
We had a situation where folks were overstocked for a period of time. They've worked that down. Now they're where they want to be. And so there's no reason to expect a big upswing.
Okay. Yeah. It definitely was a different kind of vibe a year ago, to say the least. Let's shift gears for a moment, Larry, over to the state of intermodal service. Service has obviously been front and center, especially in Washington, D.C., when they were having a lot of different hearings regarding the state of railroad service, saying it wasn't really meeting the needs of shippers for a whole host of reasons. But we're a bit past that now. How are things going, as far as you can tell, on the service side so far in 2024?
Well, I think actually, despite what the STB hearings and all of that, service has been actually quite good, especially given the magnitude of the surge that we've seen. We're up coming out of the California, coming out of LA Long Beach, and coming out, we're back up at levels which are roughly equivalent to where things were at the height of the post-pandemic surge.
Okay.
When everything was melting down. Well, this is the story of what didn't happen. We didn't get a meltdown this go around. Actually, things are running quite smoothly. We are seeing some stretching out of dwell times in Southern California, but I think that's to be expected given the magnitude of the swings that are working their way through that system. So I think actually the story from a service perspective has been a good one. The network, based on the statistics that these STB assembles, the network is still fluid. We are seeing some deterioration in recent weeks in train speeds and some of the other measures that the STB tracks. But one of the most important, from my perspective, is the number, the STB tracks, the number of intermodal trains that are being held in terminals for lack of crews, power, or other reasons. And those numbers are actually lower than the five-year average. So what that indicates is that the system is more than adequately supplied with crews and locomotives and the other items that went during the post-pandemic surge were short and caused a lot of disruption. We're just not seeing that this year. So okay. I think the story is actually a relatively good one.
Yeah, that's definitely a good news situation, to say the least, especially considering how under the microscope things were in previous years. So Larry, I don't know. Well, it's obviously it's really been a huge topic, to be honest, that being tariffs, coupled with the upcoming election in a few weeks. I don't know. You know, obviously, we don't have a crystal ball. Nobody knows what the outcome of the election is going to be. But one thing that looks to be a common theme is that tariffs will remain, and they will probably in some cases increase. What does that mean for the intermodal market from a volume perspective, perhaps, and maybe from an overall productivity perspective? Is an increase in tariffs a pro or a con for the sector?
Well, I think it's probably an overall negative. It's certainly in the short run, it's super disruptive, and it will create tremendous surges in volume as the tariff is threatened. If Trump wins, I expect that folks will accelerate their imports in an attempt to beat what might be coming down the road.
Yes.
Just tremendously disruptive, and that might not be limited just to overseas, but also with regard to Mexico and Canada. It gets to the point where I would certainly not want to venture any kind of a forecast, except that, it will be just super disruptive and super, in my view, a super negative, outcome. Mm-hmm. If we see huge increases in tariffs, and beyond that, everybody's just going to be scrambling to try to accommodate to a new reality. And I'll put that in the realm of one of those black swan events, low probability, high impact, unforecastable, and the effects of which, I think anyone that claims they know what's going to happen if you hike tariffs 100%, 200%, they don't know what they're talking about.
No, understood. And I agree. So looking at on the over the road motor carrier side of things, Larry, there's obviously been a lot of talk about capacity in the form of too much capacity. Capacity needs to leave the market to get things back into equilibrium, et cetera. In fact, a friend of mine was at the Inland conference last week, and he had told me he saw you speak, and you said something along the lines of, it's hard to sustain a recovery on the back of capacity exiting the market, which is a really interesting and good point. So I just was wondering if maybe we could use that as perhaps a jumping off point for what is going on with capacity and what needs to happen with motor carrier capacity as it relates to intermodal.
Well, what I said at the Inland was that I in my view of history, that you can't find a situation where the truck over the road sector was in an overcapacity situation, let's say similar to where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was solved, and they moved into a capacity constrained, better pricing outlook from a carrier standpoint, worse pricing outlook from a shipper standpoint.
Sure.
Purely on the back of capacity exiting the system. There's just not enough discipline for that to happen. The only way that things tighten up is when demand picks up. And absent an acceleration in demand for truckload transportation, I don't really see us getting out of this, you know, in any meaningful way. You know, there is a very slow process where capacity is exiting the system. But as that starts to have an effect and things begin to tighten up, well, that capacity leaving the system is gonna stop, you know, because the pressure will come off. So we're just not going to really be able to get there just purely on the back of capacity leaving the system, man. Okay. And I don't see the ingredients for, I'll say, a significant pickup in demand. I mean, perhaps we'll see some strengthening, you know, on the manufacturing goods, housing related side of the equation, where so much of the freight demand lies. I'm certainly not building into my forecast any terrific acceleration there. And, you know, the intermodal is the tail, especially domestic intermodal is the tail of the dog. Truckload, long haul truckload is the dog, and intermodal is the tail. So, you know, wherever truckload goes, intermodal follows.
Understood. Okay, great. Just a few more quick ones here, Larry. When we look at sort of the pricing environment, the rate environment, there's obviously a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that can quickly influence pricing, whether it be from both a spot or a contract perspective. How have intermodal rates, in your opinion, held up over the course of this year? And what could be in store in the coming months? I know, for example, the recent hurricanes probably did not help things from the pricing side.
Well, I mean, you know, from an intermodal perspective, the action is mainly on the contract side. Spot rates are a smaller piece of the intermodal puzzle than they are in truckload. And as you know, as I said, you know, where intermodal rates are going is governed by what's happening on the truckload side. So we've had a relatively weak pricing environment for truckload motor carriers, and that has translated into an equally weak pricing environment for intermodal. And, you know, that is being illustrated by the fact that for 5 quarters, intermodal share on the domestic side of intermodal was stuck at about 6% of long haul truck. We did see it based on my sort of preliminary look at the September numbers, which now lets me look at the third quarter. Mm-hmm. That maybe we saw a little bit of an uptick in the third quarter to maybe 6.1 or 6.2. So, you know, there is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel on that one. But generally, until we start to see some share recovery, I think pricing is going to continue to be under pressure.
No, I definitely agree. It's hard not to see it any other way. So, Larry, one thing I wanted to touch upon with you was the ongoing U.S.-Mexico cross-border logistics landscape. It's everywhere you look, in a sense. You see more and more companies setting up shop there. You see motor carriers introducing new services in and out of there. 3PL setting up shop, whether it be near Laredo or places close by. How's it looking from the intermodal perspective when we talk about Mexico, U.S. cross-border relations? And
well, it's a bit of a mystery, Jeff, because as strong as the market across the border has been, and, you know, if you look at the inbound loaded truck moves based on the Bureau of Transportation statistics, it's up some huge percentage this year versus last. And we're just not seeing that on the intermodal side. In fact, intermodal is down. Domestic intermodal crossings of the border, both directions, are down almost 6% year to date. So for whatever reason, and this is, I think, a bit of a mystery, intermodal has not been participating to any great extent in this uptick in demand across the border. Now, where you are seeing big growth is in the domestic Mexican market, which you know, on the domestic side, this is domestic containers that start and end their journey within Mexico. Well, those numbers are up 85% year to date. So huge growth, but that's mainly, I suspect, share shift from highway to intermodal because that market is in its infancy down there. You know, these the volumes are still relatively low, about 18,000 moves a month, you know, but growing extremely rapidly. So we sort of have a tale of two markets here. The Mexico market really growing strongly, but the cross-border market having problems.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. And just to wrap up, two quick ones, Larry, I'll put them in the form of a two-part question. One simply being, what are the things that you're keeping an eye on or looking at closely regarding intermodal in 2025? And then the part two, what could the intermodal market look like in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, the thing that I'm most wanting to see is continued improvement in domestic market share. You know, I expect that the very strong results that we saw this year on the international side will not be repeated. They are a function of some one-off events, and we won't see the same situation in 2025. So if intermodal is going to grow, then it needs to grow on the domestic side. And with truckload growth being relatively constrained, as we have already discussed, the only way that's going to happen is through regaining market share. And there's lots of room there because domestic intermodal share was pre-pandemic, pre-PSR, you know, somewhere up in the 7% range. Now we're at 6%. So there's a lot of room to grow if the industry can demonstrate the ability to do that. The question being whether it's well positioned to do that, and that's a topic I think that would require a whole nother seminar to, you know, a webinar to cover. So that's really, I think, what the big opportunity is for intermodal. I think they've got the service product under control. I think there may be some, you know, some pricing issues relative to a, you know, kind of down truck rate market. You know, so there it's not saying it's going to be easy to regain that share, by no means, but I hope that they will be able to do that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, listen, Larry, this brings us to the end of our allotted time for today's podcast. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to say thanks for spending some time with us again. As we said before we hit the record button, I think this is at least the third time you've been on our podcast. So thanks again for joining us.
Jeff, always a pleasure, and look forward to future opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our listeners, please feel free to go check out Larry on LinkedIn. He's always got some great posts, and he's always sharing his knowledge and insights regarding intermodal trends, volumes, etc. And that's on LinkedIn. And also, please go ahead and check out his website for Gross Transportation Consulting. It's under the URL intermodalindepth.com. And for those of you on Twitter, please go ahead and give us at Logistics Management a follow, simply at Logistics MGMT. And also, if you're not signed up to our podcast, please feel free to go ahead and do so wherever you get your podcast. Just go ahead and find and search for Supply Chain 24/7. It should come right up. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time.